Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Welcome, everyone. This is the place where you can get the best information, help, suggestions, things to think about in your life. Because what I do is I kind of interview excellent authors, you know, relationship experts, self-help experts, medical doctors who could talk about the brain and why we do the things we do. Some of my most, greatest interviews. And also, I'm going to answer some questions for you today. I have a lot of listeners who email me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. So what I do sometimes, from time to time, if I'm not interviewing an author or an expert on a particular subject that I think most of you guys have really, you know, reached out and wanted to find out more about, what I do is I take your emails and I answer a lot of your questions. And what I find is that although everybody's life is different and situations are different, everybody varies, what I find is that there are a lot of similarities in the things that we need and the things we want to learn and find out about, especially ourselves and why we do the things we do. And really, which is so interesting to me, is more about why others do the things they do, you know. So I think self-introspection, you know, looking at why you act the way you do or think the way you do, I think that's really the start. Because they say that your perception of other people starts with you. Even though you may say, yeah, but that guy at the office is such a jerk, and everybody knows it. Well, you've got to maybe change your perspective up a little bit. Yeah, it's you know, acknowledging the consensus of belief of what's going on with people and things and stuff like that. But I think it's really important to just sort of look within yourself and examine your thoughts and fears and negativity and all that nasty stuff that gets you into trouble and makes you feel bad every day. And that's one of the things we're going to be talking about. Because several of my listeners wrote in and asked me about sort of cleaning up their thoughts. So we're going to be talking about self-talk, as we call it. A little bit of cognitive behavioral therapy. But I promise it won't be boring. We'll make it interesting and easy. Kind of easy to do. Because sometimes these self-help books about, you know, changing your thoughts, changing your life, that's great and all, but if we don't believe it, it's not going to happen. We can say and act as if, you know, for 10 years, but unless we really embrace it and believe it, you know, the good stuff about ourselves and about our successes and about what we deserve in life, it's probably not going to happen sooner. Okay, so today we're going to be answering questions about how to distinguish whether someone really wants a relationship or not. Particularly, a girl wrote into me, really nice, sounds like a really nice person. And by the way, all of you guys who wrote in are really nice people, and I thank you so much for reaching out and asking these questions at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I always ask for your feedback as well. Maybe you have some good suggestions too to add. And I will pull those up right here and bring them in and be nice to people because, you know, compassion is really important as well. Be nice. So, like I said, we're going to be talking about how to determine whether someone's really into you and really is a good material for a partner or really wants to go out with you. and or not. Particularly, we're going to be talking about a guy's behavior because a cool lady named Kelly wrote me. Also, we're going to be talking about feeling detached from your partner and having a lot of changes in your sex life and how to talk about that with your partner. Whoa! Boom! Just got a lot of elevations on the listenership on that one. How come that always works? Is it because it's so common? Or because every time I talk about sex on the radio, it goes, yeah, let's talk about it. I don't know. I think it's more common, to be honest with you. I think that's what's going on. So as mentioned, we're going to be talking about, you know, how to sort of talk to yourself and have be in a higher place in your mind, projecting positivity. Try to hang on to that. Keep that with you throughout the day. That's a hard one, but we can do it. Of course, we all can't always be happy and in la-la land and you know, life's great. No, we all have stuff. We all have arguments and we all have issues. But anyway, so we're going to be talking about that. Self-talk, what that means. And also some low self-esteem issues. Also, I have an email from a listener who is getting married. And they've been to a religious counselor, which is awesome. I always suggest that. If you have a particular religious belief, you go to your counselor there within the belief and just sort of, you know, clarify what are the good things that make a healthy marriage. But then the husband-to-be reached out to me and said, what things can I think about in my own, you know, mind about how to kind of focus on having a positive marriage. So I'm going to be answering that question as well. So guys, hang in with me. And if you have any other questions, and I'll throw it out there, I'll give you a quick answer. The one would be straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. We don't have a therapeutic relationship, by the way. I'm not giving you therapy. What I'm doing is I'm just suggesting to you healthy things that healthy people do and think. And just ways to feel better in your life. So thanks, guys. So let's get on with it. This is one of the most common things that happen in my office with young adult women, especially. So I thought, whoa, I'm just going to jump into this one first thing. And it's sort of trying to figure out if someone is really into you or not. Okay. Now, I don't know where you guys are listening from, whatever part of the country or, you know, the nation, wherever you are. If you're in Los Angeles, as we are, it's a tough dating scene. Come on, this is the entertainment capital of the world. This is all about looking good and being the hottest. And it's all about, you know, self-PR. That's what it is. You know, this is Instagram, the capital of looking hot. So much comparison. So much, you know, low self-esteem due to what we're supposed to look like, how much fun we're supposed to be having, and how popular we're supposed to be. So it's really tough, I think, for men and women dating in Los Angeles. Because, I don't know, this is what I hear. I'm a native here. And, you know, I grew up in L.A. So I just kind of look around me and I go, well, it's normal to me. But it's gotten crazier now, of course. So let's rock it here. I've got Kelly who emailed me. The names are not the true names of the individuals in order to protect them. Kelly says, I met this cute guy who works with me in a different department in another office, so I don't have to see him too much at work. Okay, cool. We started out going to happy hours with our coworkers together. One night we got too drunk and ended up making out in the parking lot in his car. Since then, we haven't really gone on a date unless there are some coworkers going out to dinner after work or maybe on a last-minute Sunday. We've had sex several times back at my place after our happy hour work get-togethers because he lives about 40 minutes away from the office. He's never talked about dating or getting together where he lives. When I hint to him that I'm not doing anything on Saturday and maybe we could meet up, he says he's really burned out and really likes to relax and or work out, and that he has a lot of family obligations. So he seems like he puts all his attention on me at the happy hours and the sex after that and tells me I'm hot. The sex is great, but I'd like to get to know him better. And I'd actually like to have a dating relationship with him. How can I tell if he's a good guy and that I'm not just convenient for him? I think you just answered your own question. And all that information you just gave me, Kelly, really? You end up making out in the parking lot in his car after the happy hours, and then he's busy on the weekends. Let's think about that right now. Doesn't sound like he's following up, texting you. Hey, had a great time last night. So I just want you to really think about some of the things to look out for. How to tell if a guy's just looking to have sex with you. And sort of where he puts you in the priority list of his life. And please don't take this into your own personal thing. I'm not good enough. I'm not good looking enough. I'm not hot enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not just hear what I'm saying when it comes to just finding more information about his behaviors that are going to tell you that there are a lot of guys out there who will appear to be interested in you conveniently in the drunken happy hours and afterwards. But then how you can tell the difference between guys who really want to get to know you and the ones who just, want to party. Okay? So a big clue is if he's not asking any questions about you other than, I don't know, what's the wildest thing you've ever done? I don't know. That's weird. Who would ask that? Actually, I knew someone. I went out with someone years ago who asked me that. I went, huh? What is the weirdest thing you've ever done sexually? He asked me. This was like our second date. And I went, bye-bye. Anyway, if he's just not really getting deep into trying to find out about you, clue number one, he keeps ordering drinks if you're sitting kind of with him for you. Also, if he calls last minute. Now, you didn't indicate to me if he's calling last minute and go, what's that song? You can call me at 10:59, but after 11, that's a booty call. If he won't make an effort to travel out of his way to see you. He lives 40 minutes away from the office, you said. He's not talking about you coming out there, whatever. He's not making any original or special plans. No. It's convenient because it's happy hour with the gang after work. Convenience. Okay. And if he makes no attempt to have a deep or meaningful conversation, that's the thing about asking about you or the drunker you guys get and he says you're hot. That's great. That doesn't really mean anything. I mean, really. A lot of times, the guys who are just out to kind of get laid, let's just put it out there. They're really cute and they're really charming many times. And we want to trust them and we want to believe them and it makes ourselves feel really good. It's fun. But, you're asking me, Kelly, because you don't feel good. And I know you'd like to get to know this guy. And it's no fun when he doesn't follow up. So kind of get a clue that this is convenient for him and just focus your attention on someone else. I would. This is what healthy people do. Again, this is not therapy for you. This is just called common sense and suggestions. Because if he's hinting, that he's burnt out and just likes to relax or he has family obligations, if you dropped that hint a few times, just run the other way, girl. That's it. And if you're having fun, after the happy hours in the parking lot, whatever, or at your place, whatever, good, enjoy that. But that's all it is. I just want you to know that. That's what it is. Take it for what it's worth, and that's okay. So if you're enjoying it, okay, just be careful. You know what I'm talking about. Thank you so much for emailing me, Kelly. StraightTalkDoc@gmail.com. You're on the couch here with Dr. Michelle. And today, I'm answering your questions that you reached out to ask me for some suggestions on, some help, maybe ideas. That's what we're doing today. So, just got a text from Greg. Oh, that's nice. Thank you. He said, great advice. I know all my friends do the same thing with the happy hour, happy girls. Okay. Thanks, Greg. Did you hear that, Kelly? Okay. It's happening a lot. All right. Stop pursuing it. Let it go. Let it go. Go for the nerds in your office who are cute and you have things in common with. All right, moving on. Well, this is a good one. I really like this one. This is from Jason. He says, hey, Doc, I'm feeling detached from my wife of 7 years because my wife's interest in having sex with me is a lot less. Mm-hmm. Very common. Not necessarily the wife, but both parties. We used to have great sex when we first met, and we were constantly doing it until the last several years throughout our marriage. We're both really busy with our work. It takes me on the road a lot, and she works about 10 hours a day. She's in the entertainment business, and is always tired when she comes home. Sometimes we do hiking and hang out with friends. We try to go out on some weekends when I'm not traveling, but she seems always tired and not interested in having sex with me anymore. I've never cheated on her, but I have thought, of course, about being with other women just to satisfy myself. I don't know how to talk to my wife about sex without making her mad. That's not good. I don't want to get farther apart in our relationship, and I crave a sexual relationship with her. She just isn't into it these days, and it makes me feel like she's not into me anymore. How do I talk to her? So that's a great question, and thank you, Jason, so much for reaching out. This is another really common one I hear. You know, and you don't have to be married for a long time. People in, you know, longer term relationships, even 2 years, things change up sometimes. And I'm not going to the dark side saying, oh, it gets boring. You got to keep it fresh. And you've got to keep talking about what you like and what you enjoy. Okay? You got to do all those things. But it is one of the most commonly, you know, expressed issues that I hear by couples that are together. It's the not enough factor, or it's the she or he lost interest. So if you want to talk to her about sex, okay, you've got to just, here's some pointers, just sort of ideas, and approach it really kindly and lovingly. So you ought to really watch how you approach her, Jason, in your facial gestures and your body language. You got to be chill. You've got to be kindly. And it's how you approach her, and it's where you approach her. And it's just sort of the way you do it. So don't broach the subject in bed. that's a buzzkill, because it's not the best time to examine the faults or dissect a performance, or, you know, when you're in bed. It should be sort of a sanctuary, you know, not a place where you're talking about your grievances and complaining with each other. So kind of make that a neutral place, kind of like, yeah, the great place. And you don't have to have sex in bed either. I mean, right? But, you know, make a plan to talk. In other words, if there's something to be said, it's really a good time to just sort of say, hey, honey, I really want to talk to you about some really cool things I was thinking about before we go on our walk Sunday. Okay? Just don't make him defensive. Because if you blindside her, rather, if you blindside her, you know, especially if she's tired after work, you don't want to start going, you never, no, don't bring it up then. Do it when she's had a lot of sleep and relaxed and you've had brunch or whatever. You're going to go on your hike, you're chilling out. Also, part of your talk, you might look fondly on the good old days, the hot old days. Because sometimes if you share a sense of nostalgia for what the two of you used to do, it kind of lead you down to the path of talking about sex openly, remember? So we used to spend hours just like making out. Or I loved it when you used to grab me and yada, yada, yada. So you can start off slowly and just saying, I love that. In other words, you're not criticizing her. You're always tired. You know, don't just say, I love it when. Use those I statements are so important to say, you know, like you're telling her. This is not about what you're doing wrong, honey, but it's about what I would love from you. So you never give me enough whatever. You never give me, you know, just tell her, I just love it if we could just totally make out and just get crazy. Just kind of roll into it. Let's just get some sleep and feel good and just be with each other. Look up Sensate Focus. You know, that's a really cool thing. Masters and Johnson created that. Yeah. It's Sensate Focus. It's just getting to know each other sensually again, you know? And also, you got to tell her what you like. You know, when I say the I statements, just tell her what you'd really like. And it doesn't have to be, you know, just get into it and do it. Because she wants the foreplay. Women want to just be loved and hugged and kissed, usually. Roll on into it slowly. But you got to be clear about what you want, okay? So if there's something that you really like and would really... And ask her what she would really like. What can I do to make you feel better? And don't berate her or belittle her. You know, you don't have to like be mean. You can be really nice. No criticism. You know, you can say something like, I know you want to make me feel good. And isn't it awesome when we get along together? But I would just love it if we could just touch and caress more. And I want you to feel good. What can I do to make you feel good? And here's what I love. What do you think about that? Have solutions in mind and be open to some ideas. Ask her questions. And I know you're tired, sweetheart. I really get it. And it's crazy. You know, I have a crazy life. But I don't know. I just feel distant from you. And no accusatory statements. Okay? Just kind of say... And it's not like a one-time conversation. You just got to say, hey, I'd love to get with you. And I'd love to have sex with you. And sometimes even sex. I'd love to make love to you. That one works too better. Because sometimes, you know, we all get anxious. We all get overwhelmed. We're chronically fatigued from work and stuff like that. And so we need rest. We need to take care of ourselves. But we also need to have sexual relations with our partners. We've got to. It's just part of health. Releases chemicals. It's awesome. It's really good for us. Brings us closer. But it's got to be, you know, really working together on what we want. Thank you, Jason, so much for reaching out on that one. That was a really good one. Hope I helped. This is Dr. Michelle, and you're on the couch here with me. I'm answering your questions today that you've written. Me on Straight Talk Doc at gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And so we've, you know, kind of covered some really common things, you know, about how to talk about sex with your partner, like what you like or what you don't like, what you do need, that kind of thing. And how to spot guys. This is particularly from Kelly, a lady. How to spot guys who really are not going to be a good fit for you because they just are out to party and, yeah, they're dogs. They just want... I mean, they may not be dogs. They're just guys who want to... They don't want a tight relationship. So it's okay. How to spot them. That's what we talked about. And you can also pull up the archive when I get off the air and listen to the show if you missed that one. Love to hear from you. You can do that. Also, my shows are on iTunes for free. iTunes podcast on the couch. Not to be confused with the sports show on the couch. This is On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. But you can listen to them, but they're really good. Those sports guys on the podcast. Anyway, here we go. We're moving on to Brandy. And she says, love your show. And I'm very aware that I'm hard on myself all the time. I talk about not being enough for everybody in my personal and work life. As you would say, I'm my own worst enemy. So she is a listener. Yay, Brandy. I know that a lot of my self-talk started with my father, who told me I'd never amount to anything constantly verbally abused me by being cruel. He called me overweight and unattractive. My mom didn't stick up for me because she didn't want to be abused by him. I forgive her, but really hate him for being so cruel. I know. How can I get rid of this self-criticism and the little voice which always says, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. Whew. Boy, is that a common one that I hear. I mean, I think every human being on this earth has the little voice. Everybody, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. Everybody has the voice. But it's just like, how loud is that voice and how many times are we telling ourselves that to self-sabotage in situations, whether it's work, relationships, friendships, you know, finding success or getting on a higher level of what you'd like in your work. You know, we just have to get through, you know, a lot of self-exploration. And you have it. You've got it, Brandy. You know why you think those thoughts. You know why. It's because all those little messages that you embraced growing up, all the negativity, you're not good enough, you're not enough of enough. You know that. You've got it, girl. So what you have to do is you have to really focus and be consciously aware that when you go into those little negative thoughts, I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm overweight, I'm whatever, not enough of enough, you have to immediately correct yourself and really write down those things that you know about yourself that are very good. And you do have gifts, and I'm sure you do have some special things that you can bring other people in your life and that people have told you. So you have to be aware of the things that your friends tell you and the good things that the people at work tell you and the good things that men who you've dated have told you or are dating. You've got to really note the things that you know about you that are positive. That's what you have to do on a continual basis. This is the way that we change those neural patterns of negativity that we bought into when we were little ones, all the way up through young adulthood, and sometimes adulthood, middle age. Still there. A lot of those things, you got to get rid of them. You got to feel better. So write down the things that you know about you. Write down those things. You've got to rebut the inner critic. Excuse me. That was kind of interesting. The inner clinic. Yeah, you do have to kind of have an inner clinic for yourself, don't you? So what you have to do is kind of challenge those negative messages. Yeah, of those critical inner voices. So what you do is you write down on one side of a piece of paper the negative things that you believe about yourself. So the harsh inner critic stuff. You know, whether you generalize, you know, life sucks and nobody's going to love me. Whatever it is, you know, I'm an imposter. People think that I'm good, but I'm an imposter. Or, you know, just misinterpreting people's facial gestures. Oh, he doesn't like me. He's frowning. Or if you catastrophize everything. Well, you know, I don't think people like me at work. I don't like the way I look. I can't exercise because I'm too tired. People don't like me or whatever it is. All those things you do, you've got to just say, wait a minute, what are the real things that I know about me? What are the real things? I am really organized and I'm really thoughtful of other people. Whatever it may be, counteract those negative statements with the things you know that are good about you. And you also really, that's like a first step, okay? But it's really not enough. It is not, Brandy. What you have to do is you have to practice some self-compassion. It means treating yourself with the same empathy that you would show of others. So if a friend were having a hard time, you'd be likely to probably really be extra caring and supportive and be there for your friend. Well, you deserve the same treatment. So rather than focusing on evaluating yourself, instead, you can acknowledge when things are difficult and try to kind of nurture and care for yourself. So, you know, you got to forgive yourself and try to be gentle with yourself rather than that critical inner voice. Stuff happens. Not a big deal. Didn't work out this time. I got criticized at work. Oh, well, that's what I need to do is learn. Recognize your humanness. We all make mistakes, right? You know, mistakes are inevitable. Part of being human helps us be more compassionate with ourselves. That's really important to do. You know, be mindful of our emotions. Be kind. Allow ourselves. We all screw up. Be honest. Keep it real. It's all right. We get to laugh at ourselves. But you're individually important. You have your own personality. Know that we all have our own stuff, and it's okay. Go to a therapist maybe and try to learn what would make you better for you. You know? And, you know, get help. Like I said, therapists be great. Great friends if you have that. Great family if you have a little bit of support. They'll keep telling you how great you are, but, you know, despite the fact maybe sometimes we don't buy it. We just won't buy it. But the only person that's going to convince us is ourselves. So it's really good to do that. And just open up and listen to what some people have to say. And really start believing the good things that they're saying about you. Embracing the good things about you. And don't self-sabotage, honey. Don't let yourself feel so bad. You know what I'm saying? So what you have to do is just take care of yourself first. As I always say at the end of the show, and then you'll be good for other people. Can't be so worried about what other people are thinking of you, honey. That little voice, I'm not good enough. The little voice that comes up and creeps up in us. And that self-talk is good too. You know, because we have a way to give new direction to our subconscious by kind of talking to ourselves consciously. Not talking out in public on the street, usually. It's probably not a good idea. But, you know, within yourself, reprogramming your internal control centers with words and statements that are more effective, that you know about you that are good. Okay. So you get to a better level of, yeah, I'm okay with that. I know who I am. I know my limitations. I'm going to try to improve on that. But I've got to be okay with who I am. Because, you know, the thing, too, is that we always project that, you know, out into other people. Like, if you're not feeling good about yourself, you're going to be a little withdrawn or you're going to be defensive sometimes, right? Other people pick that up and they think it's something else. They think you don't like them. Or they don't really understand where you're coming from because you're being defensive, because you feel low about you. So just, you know, just kind of things that might help you with yourself. And use a journal, you know, write down the negative things you think, rebut them. You know, I'm not smart enough. Wait a minute. I finished college and I did this and I've done that and I've got a good job. Ah, wait a minute. I am smart. Yeah, but my friends are like paralegals and they're going to be attorneys. Cool for them. Good for them. Be proud of who you are and where you're at in your life. Do not compare yourself with other people. You just got to take care of you. The only way I say that's good if you compare yourself with other people is if it motivates you to do something more. So it's about making yourself feel better and motivated and excited instead of always being low about who you are. Because if you have kind of low self-esteem and you're still buying those old voices that, you know, those old messages your dad gave you, well, you can get stress and loneliness. You feel left out. You feel self-conscious. You know, you got to just take care of yourself. All right. Thank you so much, Brandy, for saying that. And I hope, you know, I really helped. Think of those things. And I know a lot of your friends have already said these things. But, you know, this is a lot of stuff that comes from studies about how to change the brain, change your thinking, change the way you look at the world. Based on how you feel about yourself. And the world will change the way it looks to you. Okay, moving along. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and we are on the couch together. And I'm taking your emails, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I'm trying to kind of like get together some of the most common questions from people that you know, are asked in therapy sessions, some of the most common issues. So, you know, this could really appeal to a wider group of you guys listening out there. Like, maybe you can catch something that I throw out there, like, oh, dang, I think of that too, or I needed that too. So, and I'm inviting you to respond to that. As well as straighttalkdoc@gmail.com to these questions that some people have. And yeah, this is cool. Oh, I love that. I just got an email from Celine, but I mean, it's so funny, you know, talking about, you know, feeling better about yourself. She just wrote, don't give a damn about what others think. You know, that's a, hey, you go girl. I like that. But yeah, I mean, sometimes we have to give a damn about what others think, especially if it's in the workplace. But no, I get where you're coming from, Celine. I know what you're saying. You know, if we're so overwhelmed with worrying about what others think about us, then we're out of our own oneness and mindfulness, and we just get out of ourselves. And we're looking at ourselves, observing ourselves, rather than just being. So, no, that was a great suggestion. I love that. Okay, we're going to move on. Now, this one has to do with marriage. I love this subject because, yeah, it's, you know, it's a heavy step in life. You know, believe it or not, you know, research shows that they have like top level stress things in our life. What situations and things cause the most stress in our life? Well, what's interesting is in one of the top five is marriage. What? Wait a minute. I thought that was supposed to be a happy time. I thought, wait, I think part of that is planning for the gigantic, humongous weddings. My sister told me that she went to a wedding. It was a very wealthy wedding of 500 people. Well, I guess when you have 500 people come to your wedding, you can have other people plan the whole thing for you, and you don't have to worry about a darn thing. But the thing about weddings that is stressful, yeah, is planning and arguing and getting all the relatives involved. Everybody has their own head. But it's not only about planning a wedding. It's about just the concept of marriage and commitment that freaks people out sometimes. Even though it all seems wonderful, if it's, you know, naturally both of you want to get married, you've been with each other a while and it's about time, and it's still stressful because it's that other step. You're kind of stepping over the line into that other more commitment. What does that mean? But it's okay. Just go gently into the marriage. because I think this is really, this will be really good for you. So, Michael writes, I have been with my fiance now for almost 2 years, and we love each other very much. We've decided to get married, but our in-laws are very different. So, I'd like some ideas for me and my partner on how to treat each other better going into the marriage and what to think about in order to make our marriage better. Michael, thank you. I appreciate that. And so cool. Cool for you. And yes, in-laws are a biggie. You know, it's really important to try to get along with our in-laws. However, they do not run your life. They do not run your life. You have your own life now that you guys have been together. Now you're engaged. You're getting married. And congratulations to you. Mazel tov, as we say. But I mean, I just... You really have to think about some things. And, you know, a lot of religious leaders would that a lot of people meet with, or therapists who are specializing in marriage and family therapy, you know, really suggest that people ask these questions. So this is what I have couples ask themselves before they get into a really serious or relationship, you know, involving marriage. So it's really important to ask your partner. And this is going to be in your, probably, in the ceremony, in the vows that you take, you know. Do you feel that you can be committed to each other through the ups and downs and the good and the bad times? These are huge. The things that, you know, there's a lot of things that happen sometimes in life when we're together, especially when we're married, then we're really kind of tied to in-laws. We have to watch out for her and or his family members too. We have to be a part of. We have to try. So, yeah. So you have to ask yourself and talk to each other about feeling committed to each other through the ups and downs. So there's health problems and there's financial problems and there's in-law problems and there's parental problems and there's that kind of thing. So how can you hang through the tough times? Do you argue and fight and because you're so sad or upset? Or can you roll through them and discuss your feelings together about how you guys are going to both cope with the stuff going down that's not nice in your life? Also, another big part of that you guys have to ask each other is, are you honest with each other? Do you and your partner do what you're going to say you're going to do for each other? I mean, do you follow through? Are you just kind of a BSer and trying to pacify your partner because you know she won't get upset and cry? Do you know how I said she? Do you notice how I said that, guys? I'm so sorry. You know, I'm just looking at that old saying, happy wife, happy life sometimes. But it's more common with guys sort of trying to appease. And I appreciate that and I like that. It's just what I see. I'm sorry. But you have to kind of follow through with what you're going to do, what you say you're going to do for your partner. Whatever it is, even the smallest thing sometimes. Yeah, we all forget. We all make mistakes. No, not a biggie. But kind of try to keep consistent with what you say you're going to do for your partner. And are you interested in learning how to be a better person and a better partner? And that talks about talking to each other. You know, that focuses on how can we talk and really, what could I do to make you feel better about, you know, okay, I go to the happy hour after work, honey. And I like to mingle with the work folk and everything. I'm not cheating. I'm not partying. I'm texting you. I'm FaceTiming you, whatever. I'm in the club. I'm not in the club. I'm in the bar after work, the sports bar. And, you know, if he's in the club, then you better look out. But anyway, so what can I do to make you happier? Well, could you come home in time for dinner when I, you know, just give me a real good time as to when you're going to be home, because I hate waiting for you and I hate getting upset. That kind of thing. Yeah. How can I make you feel a little safer and better? And that's about trust as well. You got to ask, you know, do you trust this person? Right? And that comes also with being emotionally open to your partner. I think it's important to also talk about your family stuff a little bit, because then, you know, and not to dump a whole bunch of stuff on your partner, but just sort of bring up, oh yeah, I have this quirky uncle, right? You know, the Saturday Night Live, that old bit where they have drunk uncle. There's always a drunk uncle, right? There's always somebody who's kind of kooky in the family and around holidays and all that. You just have to put up with. So just talk about sort of your family dynamics and some of your issues maybe. Maybe what you've learned from past relationships. I really discourage you talking about past relationships in terms of, you know, all the great sex you had. I just don't think that's a good idea. Don't go there. You can talk about, oh, I really love this person and I had a great relationship. But leave out the sex, because, I mean, we start thinking things, guys and girls. Oh, was he hotter than me? Oh, what did his body look like? Oh, she must have been me. Don't go there unless you're really, really self-confident, because, you know, you don't want to go to the visuals, right? Also, it's really important that you kind of define that the relationship with your partner you're about to marry is the most intimate and deep relationship that you have. Plan quality time together. Put that person ahead of your other relationships. Another common thing that I see with couples who are married is that one or the other puts their own, immediate, you know, biological families ahead of their new spouse. You know, oh, my mom called. I got to go. She's having some emotional issues. I've got to drop everything and run over there and make her feel better. Or my sister's just freaking out because this guy again, you know, he was supposed to call her and I have to go help her and make her feel better. Huh? What? Huh? Or, you know, and on the guy's part, too. You know, I see this a lot of times. Your biological family, sometimes you put them first. Well, they're family. Yeah, I get it, but I'm kind of your new family. I'm your spouse, and I'm with you. Let's jump in the car and go help your sister get over this, whatever. But you really need to put your partner, they're your married partner, you know. So it's communication, helping your partner meet their needs in the relationship. And also communicate openly about your dreams and hopes and fears and anxieties. And don't judge. Tease, of course. That's cute. You can turn it into fun stuff. Gosh, you're so scared about this. Why are you so scared about that all the time? What are you freaking out about? Yeah. Be forgiving. Don't hang on to stuff. Don't bring up old crud from the past. Be humble about your own faults. Own it. And of course, I think, as we discussed earlier, you know, be faithful sexually. Really, that's like a biggie, I think, with a lot of people. Unless you're cool about having an open relationship. Because, you know, a lot of people are cool about that. I've had that in my therapy office many times where there's couples who are in open relationships. It usually doesn't turn out cool. It just doesn't. Down the line, it's all fun. It seems cool. And And then personal kind of issues start getting involved. Doesn't usually turn out the way it was meant to turn out. Not usually helping a relationship deepen its trust. Because unless you are so, so together and not even going to think about your spouse having sex with someone else and can't even, you know, envision that. Unless it turns you on. I mean, that happens sometimes too, and that's okay if that's what works for you. But it usually doesn't work, these open relationship things, to have open sexual relationships. It gets yucky and mucky, especially when problems come up, and then the partner on the other side, whoever it is, the man or the woman, they use it against the other person. So it gets weird. Think about that. Okay. So thank you so much for emailing me, and I appreciate you for reaching out on that one, Mike, because that's a really good question. I thank you guys so much for emailing me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. If you have any questions or comments about some of the suggestions I gave today, I love it. You know, be nice. Everybody always has their own little comments or little things they say, you know, and they've been rolling in as I've been talking about, you know, how to have a better marriage and how to, you know, get some self-respect and not fall for a guy who's kind of going to be using you. And how to talk to your partner about having better sex. Some of these really good things are rolling in, and I appreciate all your comments as well. And I appreciate your funny stuff, too. It's all good. It's really nice. And if you would like to email me, and if you have some questions or comments, I can use your question on the air, and I will, of course, leave your name out and keep it totally confidential. And as I did, I'll contact you and let you know that I'm going to be answering your question on the air. And that's the way we do it here on the couch with Dr. Michelle. All right? StraightTalkDoc@gmail.com. So take good care of yourselves first. And as I always say, you know, it's the way that we can really live our lives better is if we feel self-nourished. It's not narcissistic. It's just sort of making sure that you're up to par with your health. You're up to par with your sleep. You're keeping it real with people. You're doing the best you can. Don't beat up on yourself. Okay, take time out to do the things that make you feel good about you and bring people into your lives who are kindly and nourishing to you, not people who demean you, not people that make you feel codependent on, not unhealthy people that have unresolved issues and put their negative stuff on you. Just take good care of yourself. That's the way it works in the world. All right, Dr. Michelle here. I'm out, and I'll be back next week. I have a spectacular author. We're going to be talking about a subject that it goes a little deeper than self-help. It goes into really looking at stuff from the past that you bought into and really pulled into those automatic thoughts and are still perseverating about, ruminating about, and really kind of messing up your life and making you anxious. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week, and I'll be back next Friday here on the couch on LA Talk Radio. Bye-bye.